Learn more about the albums you love with Dissect, a music analysis podcast hosted by me, Cole Kushner, a lifelong musician and composer. Each season of Dissect dives deep into a single album, forensically dissecting the music, lyrics, and meaning of one song per episode. Our newest season is covering Tyler, the Creator's Igor, a beautifully honest album in which Tyler explores love, communication, masculinity, and truth. Listen to Dissect today only on Spotify, because great art deserves more than a swipe.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one.
Hello, and welcome to the Ringer Prestige TV Pod, another season, a new us. It's me and Waz.
By us, man, I really want to know, like, what do you mean? Like, what are people,
I know,
Chris?
It's like, just a market, man. Economic units.
Just the market. Man, what an incredible first episode. It's like you just get dropped right back into the pool, right?
Yeah.
Head first. It was dope. I had a great time with it. Everybody sort of reprises their role. And exactly who we know them to be. And I think that's, to me, that's one of the show's greatest strengths, even if it, a lot of people think that's the biggest criticism is how repetitive the show can be. But I call it consistent.
Yeah, you know, you say we jump right into the pool head first. That's not a good thing on Succession.
Not always.
Dudes lose their teeth that way. Waz and I are going to be doing these precaps. They're a little bit of a preview of the next episode, a little bit of our thoughts on the previous episode. We could start with that first episode, though, of the season, which I agree was excellent, was just the right mix of, like, one-liners and comedy with the, like, very tender ending between Tom and Shiv. But as far as plot goes and the, like, financial mechanics of the show, because you and I are known for our acumen when
it
comes
course,
to this
thing. Of course. I've got a subscription to The Economist.
That's right. So the kids are making their move against Logan Part 55, which they've been trying to do over the course of this series. And this time it involves them hijacking his deal for Pierce, which is this, like, Condé Nast-esque media conglomerate. Probably has some, like, New Yorker, New York Times, like, left liberal elite type vibes. And at the end of the episode, in a bidding situation where the kids go up to $10 billion in their valuation, and Logan eventually says, "Congratulations, you fucking morons, you said a bigger number," which is a very funny summation of all negotiations.
Great Logan moment.
What percentage of you, how confident are you that there is another shooter drop in that? That Logan wasn't just like, "You got me."
Yeah, I'm sure it feels like Logan, like, they position him as being in this super restless state, right? He's got all of these decades of success. He's just closed the biggest deal of his life as his latest success, but yet he still feels like he's got more to do. He feels antsy. And so, yeah, just the idea that he's going to rest on his laurels wouldn't jibe with what we saw in the episode. And I think more importantly, what the episode, for me anyway, makes plain is that the kids are not going to win. Like, in any reading of what winning means, they are not going to come out, quote unquote, on top.
Running this company.
No.
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. I'm as sure about that as I am of anything that goes on in this show.
Because their purchase of Pierce, from my understanding, is contingent on Logan selling most of his company
right.
to Gojo, to Lucas Mattson. And yeah. the idea is, I think if I remember correctly, in the third season, it's essentially like the platform, the pipes, the brass fittings of Waystar Royco are interesting to Lucas for a variety of reasons, but that he was going to keep this news division, that he was going to keep his Fox right. News-esque channel and some of his tabloids and stuff like that, and that the kids then are now taking this jewel that he had got his eyes on in terms of having like another piece, another part for his portfolio, his media empire. But if the kids' purchase is contingent on Logan going through with this sale, and Logan is now basically put them in a situation where it's like, you're waiting for me to sell something so that you can get your 5% yeah. of my company so that then you can buy the thing that I was bidding against yes. you for. You're now counting on me not blowing up that deal, which just seems unlikely.
It just seems obvious. And, you know, I was listening to you and Andy talk about the show. I don't remember if you were talking about Succession specifically, but just a way of watching TV. And I think Andy was the one that said, I'm not interested in watching this like a Reddit profile.
Yeah, to solve it.
Like, everything is there.
Yeah.
We know what's going to happen.
I mean, that dude was definitely like talking about the afterlife in a diner.
Right? You know what I mean? No, of yeah. course. Yeah. Of course. There's that. There's those breadcrumbs. But it's just, these kids have $3 billion coming their way, which is not to speak of the money that Logan has already earned in his life
uh-huh.
that they're going to come into. They've got these, I don't know if these are Emiratis or Saudis or whoever, yeah. backers,
right.
For their new venture,
the
which
100.
They would be building yeah. themselves. And literally after one phone call with Tom, they're like, no, why would I build something? Why would I work at something? Let's go use daddy's money to go purchase this already made furnished thing. Because we are losers. We are not builders. We are not like dad. We are the leeches, right? And so that's all you kind of need to know about these kids. It's just like, the second that something way easier that they themselves don't have to get their hands dirty to build comes along, they're right on it.
That's a really interesting way of looking at the family dynamic and their relationship to work, because how does this episode end, really? It's with Logan watching his fucking cable station late at night and
yeah.
reaming out
He's still
Sid,
hungry.
Because he actually has takes on yeah. like how they're doing their work and whether or not the anchor is attractive enough and what, you know, when people watch and what they want to see when they watch. And he's like an old school media guy. He cares about like the headline and he cares about the deck and he cares about the photo choice and everything like that. And the kids are like, listen to the way that they describe themselves. You know, it's just like, you're going to kill someone in a 7-Eleven. You're going to get jerked off by an ATM machine. And I'm going to wind up with nothing. And they don't ever talk about themselves as like, well, what could you actually do? What could right. you build? Really, the closest one to being like capable at something like that is Roman.
It's awesome. Like I said, the reason why I think this show, it's not going to be hard to figure out where things are going, how they position these kids and their understanding of their position in the meritocracy or elite structure, right? Where I think Roman is clearly the most self-aware
uh-huh.
in the sense that the reason why he has a bit of contempt for all of this, like the way he's talking to his investment banker, he's like, this is what you learn at Harvard.
Yeah.
Like, he understands that it's all bullshit. He's only there but for the work and the money that his father has earned. And he knows this.
Yeah.
He knows how this whole structure works. I think Kendall, I don't think Kendall sees it as bullshit. He knows he's only there for his dad because of his dad, but I don't think he sees the entire structure as like a complete clown show. And then Shiv, who just like, she really believes that she not only deserves all of this stuff, that she's somehow done anything at all to be in the position that she's in. And I think the episode does such a great job of it. Like, she's so she feels so satisfied. Her face, she's the most satisfied after the deal gets done with the Pierces, where she's just like, I just did a thing. I'm just such a great, savvy businesswoman. It's like,
the fist bump.
You did nothing. You guys overpaid for this thing with somebody else's money.
Yes.
That's it.
Who's the money of whose you're bidding against.
Right.
You know, like, there's a really interesting, like, little theme throughout that opening section of the episode, the first episode, where they're kind of describing why they're doing what they're doing and what they need. And you're right. Kendall is all superficial. It's keywords, it's cliches. And he's like throwing out like different like concepts and whether or not it's going to be like Substack meets The Economist meets The New Yorker.
Right.
And Shiv is like, there's a presidential election and it's 1933 and I want to have a say.
1933 for who? Certainly not you, Shiv.
Yeah.
It's a joke. Like the delusions of grandeur. It's so obvious. And I don't know if it was last season or the season before where I realized that I just couldn't root for the kids.
Yeah.
Not that I want to see them fail necessarily, but it's just like, I can't get behind these people.
Right.
And I think Shiv is the avatar for that because she is so smelling herself and like really believes that she is just God's gift to business, to politics, to, you know, negotiation. And it's just like, you guys, you're going to get killed again.
The only person who seems to have like a grasp on it, and he's brought it up multiple times over the seasons, where especially when he was talking to Lucas, when he was talking to various other people who are thinking about getting involved in ATN, is Roman, where he's like, I'm fucking basically post-literate. Like, I can't even read. I just take in these little bits and bytes of information. And he actually has, regardless of my opinion of it, a vision and an idea of like where everything is going, where it's like people are looking at these words on their phones, but it's not like reading. It's like they're just getting little like clicks of a pleasure center in their brain. That's it.
Yeah.
And so in that way, Roman is actually the most logical heir to his father.
Yeah.
Because he's not trying to stop fascism from rising and he's not trying to start the new version of The Economist. He's just trying to make a buck by like selling people catheters and blood pressure medication in the middle of the night.
Whatever it takes. He's the only one with any kind of vision. And I think that the thing that we've seen over and over is that he doesn't have his dad's instinct for ripping people's hearts out. That's like, that's the only thing he's missing. But as far as competence, he's the only one all episode like, okay, yes, 9.5 and 10 billion don't seem like that much of a difference, but he's like, it's five guys. We can't just flippantly talk about $500 million.
Yeah.
He's the only one.
1,000.
He's like, guys, like, that's a shit ton of fancy sushi. Like, he's the only one that would even have that conversation. Everybody else is like, well, who cares? Like, what's 500 million? Like, literally, what is 500 million?
The reason why money has no object to Kendall is because he's spending all of it on his clothing. That's what I kind of mostly wanted to talk to you about today, because I've done a little bit of math. I think conservatively, Kendall's wearing like 12K in the scene with his brother and sister and T, the banker, where Tom Ford jacket, Tom Ford jeans, $1,000 Gucci gray run sneakers. And I couldn't find a price on that hat, but it has to be $500 at least.
Yeah.
What did you think of Kendall wearing $15,000 worth of Amazon basics?
These are the things that the show absolutely nails that I think are important because they understand the finer details of this culture of these people where, you know, Tom, when he's making fun of Greg's date, he's just like, this is just not how it's done. Kid, like, we don't move like this. You know, when you get to this place, and Tom would know because he's a yokel from Minnesota.
Yeah.
So he understands, like, when you get to this station in life, you do not behave this way. Like, you can't dress all garishly. Like, you should never express money.
Right.
Like, that should never be part of your self-expression. And the fact that your date doesn't get that just shows that she doesn't belong. And Kendall, he is the embodiment of what Tom is talking about. It's like, yes, I'm wearing $20,000, but I look like I just walked out of Old Navy.
Right.
It's crazy. You know, like, the attention to detail. And even Greg, you know, I feel like Greg did get made fun of at one point for wearing the wrong tie.
Yes.
Or something like that. And, like, even Greg, you can see he's learning how to perform, you know, upper crust culture. He's he's getting there. But his date, unfortunately, with the huge bag.
Bridget Random all of
that,
fuck,
like,
man.
That conversation that Tom is having with him, it's everything. Like, that's why I love this show. Just those details that they can explain to you and why it matters. And then, you know, some of the interactions that I'm sure we'll get into when you talk about Tom and Shiv. But yeah, it's just perfect. This is what the show nails.
Tom says to Greg, does she have her flats there for her subway ride? Oh,
just burned my bridge and tunnel soul, Chris. Just my Queens native soul. I was like, oh my God, that is such a sick burn.
And it's so funny because that performer and like the character's like outfit is not out of like, it's not like she was wearing like a bag on her head. She was just wearing cowboy boots with like a skirt and a top. But she was like just 5 degrees out of place.
It was like
I asked your grandfather for like for a selfie.
It's perfect. And like I had just recently read a piece in the New Yorker. I forget the writer's name, but it was about like the rise of J. Crew.
Wah wrote that. Wasu. Yeah.
Yes. It was about the rise of J. Crew. And you know, the guy who founded J. Crew was a Jewish guy. But he understood like instinctively what Americana was, right? Like we're gonna sell these clothes that are not about what rich people wear, but what rich people wear when they're at play.
Right.
When they're hanging out, when they're just chilling. And just understanding that that's the expression you want to go for. Like, you don't want to seem like you're trying too hard or you feel desperate. Like, this guy understood that there's a way to perform this aspirational life.
And that's
right?
The invention of prep, right?
Exactly. It's the invention of, just the style that we associate with brands like Tommy Hilfiger, Polo, Nautica, all the stuff that a lot of us wore back in the 90s. And I just thought that was brilliant that, like, you know, this guy who was a Jewish guy, the child of immigrants, upwardly mobile guy, he's like, no, this is how the aristocracy in America comports themselves. And it's aspirational, and this is how you guys are gonna do it. And Tom just distilled that idea just so beautifully in that cutting ass conversation with Greg.
What did you think of as the host of Full Court Fits? What did you think of Kendall sneakers?
You know what's so funny? I tend to hate designer sneakers.
So they're kind of they're Gucci. They also look a little bit like the Mountain Man Nike ACG kind of
right.
Like
it's
blocky.
It's a designer sneaker that's trying to be performance.
Yeah.
Right? Which is rare. Like, a lot of times what they're trying to sell you is like, oh, this is Italian leather on this sneaker, right, and this is why you should pay $1,200. So I'm generally opposed to the concept of designer sneakers because it's just like, yo, Nike doesn't make three-piece suits, right? So why should Tom Ford make athletic sneakers? It doesn't make any fucking sense to me. But those sneakers are actually dope. And I think what I like, that's why Jeremy Strong is kind of a genius. It's like everything is so considered in his performance. So even when he's not acting, he's still performing.
I think that the sunglasses he was wearing, I saw a GQ video where he was like, I had like a European sunglasses designer like make Kendall's sunglasses. Like,
of course.
Yeah, one of
He's like, these are the glasses this guy would wear.
Yeah.
He's not going to wear Gucci glasses. That's too, you know, sort of garish. Like, this Kendall Roy, he's in tune enough to know the do's and the don'ts. Like, he's vaguely cool in that way.
Are you a Kendall Naomi fan?
Of course. Yeah. I need more of that. Just the like sort of, we're the damaged versions of this world. Give me all of that.
Yeah, like, she's been in the show for like 12 minutes. But I fucking love that lady.
Electric, yeah. Electric. And she's, what I like about her is and the Pierces, just generally speaking, is just like, yeah, we're rich pricks, but we are just 10 times more savvier than these fucking idiots. Like, they're self-aware enough to know that, like, yeah, it's disgusting how rich we are. And that's why Nan refuses to talk about money. And like, there's a self-consciousness there. Whereas like, they know, like,
when next time you're up with Bill, will you do the like, I hate negotiating as you look out the window? It's so disgusting.
Bill, I need a raise.
Yeah.
Let's not talk about money, though. We don't want to talk about money.
On the other side of Kendall, outside of the shirt, the pants, the jacket, the sneakers, is like what's going on inside. And as always, I find Jeremy Strong probably the most compelling actor on television. And the thing that I love about Kendall is even though I have dinged the show before, or at least voiced like a confusion about whether or not like how Kendall kind of resets back to zero all the time for the sake of comedy, which is like no problems with that.
Right.
But like a guy that almost tried to take his own life, a guy that has had like these like meth binges, a guy that has had like incredible crash and burn moments, incredible moments of vulnerability with his sister, with his father, whoever, told his brother and sister that he killed a man.
Yeah.
You know, and is now coming in and be like, oh, Romy, like 3 months later, like whether or not that always tracks for me. But this is still a dude who can be like, I used to smoke horse.
Yeah.
I used to smoke heroin. And that's why I need to start a blog, because I need something to take the place of my drug habit, which is just always like, they always distill it down to its purest form.
Yeah, he's got a new lease on life. And I love that the show's version of Kendall being cured is Kendall understanding that he has this problem. And it's toxic to relate to your job or your work in the way that he's describing it, but it's better than H.
What work, though? What work?
Exactly.
He's going to Dubai and like, you know, leveraging his relationships or whatever.
Of course, of course. But it's like, at least he could fool himself into thinking
Kendall's
like,
not editing live blogs.
No, he didn't put in the same type of pain that Chris Ryan did. He's never
he doesn't know what trade deadline day is like. When you're like, wait, did they put Brevin Knight in this or not? Is there a sinker outfit converting?
He never founded a blogspot.com. Like, he's never done any of that. But this is his version of that, right? Just the idea that, like, all right, I'm going to, you know, throw myself into courting, you know, investors in Dubai. I think the show's version of Kendall has made a step is that he knows without something like this, trying to beat your dad, trying to grow a business, trying to do whatever, he's going to turn to these alternative means of feeling alive.
Yeah. So the person who seems to actually be the spine of this, the hundreds, but also like the thing that's keeping this whole kids group together is Roman. And in the way, same way that the Kendall character, I think, has oscillated back and forth, like from crisis to confidence to crisis to confidence, Roman, I think his trajectory has actually been like the most significant. Like, this dude started out as like a pipsqueak jerking off onto a tower window and is now like credibly sort of running meetings and giving notes on fonts and stuff like that. What do you think of where Roman is in this last season, as we got one episode after under our belt?
Yeah, I think of everybody on the show, him and Tom are the two that you can legitimately say have made a transformation. Everybody else is the exact same as when we met them episode one, except for those two guys. So it's cool to see him be the most competent sibling, the most, you know, emotionally stable and or at least emotionally intelligent and aware, right? He seems to be really in tune with his brother and his sister and how they feel. Like, he really, like, when he's like, oh, Shiv is having a breakdown because she's just like, holy smokes, my marriage is, like, literally officially over.
What does he say? Like, we hate it when love dies.
Yeah, that was
such a sad day. Yeah.
That was so good. He's got so many great lines this episode of just being incredulous and just like, everybody, everything around me is so ridiculous and absurd. But yeah, to me, his transformation is the steepest for sure. If we could see a freaking pie chart or a graph, his thing would be like a rocket. Whereas Shiv and Kendall and Logan and, you know, Jerry and all of the little sycophants, everybody is exactly the same.
There's a line when I think towards the end of the bidding, when they're at the Pierce's, and the Pierce daughter or nephew or whoever or niece is like, the one wearing jeans and like the blue shirt tucked into the jeans is like, let me go show you the view from the veranda. And Roman's just like, yeah, let's do that. Like, he's just kind of like, he's just always got like these great little one-liners. Let's talk a little bit about Tom.
Yeah.
Because Tom is almost unique in this show in that he will make major plot decisions for the entirety of the series. His machinations impact the entire show, but they're not always obvious to us. Like, so the last episode of the third season, while he's alluding to it and he alludes to Greg about like making a deal with the devil and everything, it's still a shock when we see him with Logan at the end of the episode. And then I think that he's going to be the X factor of this entire season. I think he's going to basically be the most important character in a lot of ways of the season, because I think he's going to determine where everything kind of winds up plot-wise. And his first call from his, like, just to talk, just to say, I was with Naomi, but it was social,
so excruciating.
But he obviously, I think, is also tipping off the kids that this Pierce thing is happening. So what did you think of Tom?
100%. I think Tom, you're right. You're so right about him being the sort of straw that stirs the drink of the show.
The Pat Beverly almost, you know?
The Pat Bev. But the other day, Pat Bev said he was being used as a spoon, but
yeah,
he was a fork, they used me as a
fork and I'm a spoon, or I think he was like, I'm the spoon that stirs the drink, but the Lakers are using me as a fork, which honestly sounds like a Succession line.
Yeah, exactly. Tom, to me, is the only person, aside from Logan, who seems to have his eye on the ball at all times and understands the game, understands the chess pieces, understand his place within the broader game. Like, we see that when he talks to Logan, he's like, if I get a divorce, and Logan's like,
I love that scene.
If you're good, you're good. Yeah. Like, if we're good, we're good. If we're not, we're not. I don't need you for anything. Like, I only need you in so far as I need you, right? And I think so Tom is very aware where he stands, and he's almost like, he reminds me of Littlefinger in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. in the sense that he's not of this world. He's an interloper, and everybody in the world knows it, is like so aware of it. They won't stop letting him know, like, you know, when Shiv was like, yeah, you fucking made it from St. Paul, you fucking piece of shit. Like, everybody never stops letting him know where he started from, and obviously, he's hyper aware of it, but I think that hyper awareness is why he's able to outmaneuver everybody.
He's different than Carl and Frank and Jerry to me, where they are like pure survivalists. They're just like, I don't really care about going up. Yeah, I just don't want to go down.
I just
want to
stay here.
Yeah.
Yep.
Tom, I think, has a little bit of ambition and restlessness to him. And he's obviously in that room when they're doing the bidding. Yeah, Logan's like, call your fucking wife. Call your fucking wife! but there's also a little bit of, I think, like, he's playing both sides in that, you know? And that'll be interesting to see, A, how much the divorce sticks, because obviously there's, I wouldn't call it like a reconciliation at the end, but maybe an understanding of one another as humans at the end.
and then acknowledgement of each other's humanity.
Yeah. And then there's also like his sort of tenuous ground with Logan, because if he's not Shiv's husband, he can't call his fucking wife.
Right.
What is he, some sort of great media man? I don't know. Tom's like instincts for running that stuff is yet to be seen.
Yeah, I don't know that he's the quote-unquote right man for the job, but at least he's up to the task, which is, again, more than we can say for so many other people.
Well, he's willing to send himself to prison.
Dude, everything.
Yeah.
I think it's the gift and the curse. Everybody understands how desperate he is. Like, he wears it on his sleeve, but it's also useful to people. Desperation can be useful.
Yeah.
And so everybody understands that about Tom, that he's both annoying as hell, but he's useful at the same time. And I think he's straddling the fence of both of those extremes. Scene by scene, it feels like, damn near, especially when he's talking to his freaking ex-wife.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
With Kizik hands-free shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy-on, easy-off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Can I ask you, did you want this show to keep going?
I'm fine with it. Yeah. I'm not one of those. I like the idea that the show realizes that the place that it would take up in our imagination if it was a 7-season show fundamentally changes.
Yeah.
Than if they just wow us with this 4th season. And I think that's something to be admired because, you know, these guys are leaving money on the table, fame, adulation, all the things that come with having basically the most zeitgeisty freaking show
I know.
In existence right now. So I think that's something to admire as artists that they're just like, look, people, like, we don't want a Game of Thrones ourselves, right?
Yeah.
We want people to really think that we did some legendary shit and so we're going to do this right and end it. I'm not sad about it. But then I also, this is something I need to ask you because everybody understands that there's too much shit right now to watch. So why do we keep doing that?
So why do we keep putting out so much shit? Yes. Or why do we get mad that there's not going to be 8 seasons of Succession?
Both.
Well, like, the too much shit is because they started all these streaming services and now they're like, we don't have enough stuff to put on these to keep subscribers interested. So if we just put up 10 shows a year that are good, that people like, that's not enough for them to sustain their memberships with their streaming services. And since it's so easy to quit on and off, go on and off of them, whereas like sure. with cable, you had to call up James Dolan.
Got
and
you.
Tears yeah. in your eyes, beg yeah, to be yeah, let yeah, out of your yeah, cable,
cable vision. Was a nightmare.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
With HBO Max, you can just go to the site and be like, click off. And then when Succession or House of the Dragon comes back on, you can be click on and spend your...
Has that been proven though, Chris, that like people who want...
I think with Netflix, there's a little bit more of a quitter thing. Like I think got Netflix you. People are a little bit more like there's nothing on it right now and I'm gonna save
and I'm just gonna quit the...
I'll save my $13. Yeah,
it's incredible.
I don't know. I mean, like this is somewhat anecdotal, but I yeah. think it's obviously a lot easier to be like I'm gonna at any given point have 4 streaming services. Sometimes it might be this one, sometimes it might be that one. Whereas with cable, you were just fucked because you were just like
locked in.
I'm locked in. It's $200 a month to just get if I just want to watch HBO or whatever. And you start out and you're like, good, this is a good $60 a month that yeah, I'm going to be spending. And then you're like, but I'd like to watch Real Madrid. So that's going to be $20 a month. And I'd like to watch, you know, back in the day, you'd be like, I guess I'll get Showtime and HBO so I can watch like Homeland and, you know, 6 Feet Under or whatever. And then all of a sudden you wind up and you're up around 130, whatever, and inflation and everything like that. And then I still have cable for live sports is what I tell myself. I also like flipping around.
Yeah.
Still. But yeah, like, so... Basically, I think the streaming services made it so that in any given month, so like the Emmys deadline to submit for this year's Emmys is, I think, April 31st or May 31st. The amount of shows coming out between now and the end of May is obscene. It would be a year's worth of shows. And not like 50% of them are just straight up not going to get the attention they deserve or warrant because people are like, I'm watching Succession. I'm watching Succession and maybe 2 other things.
Right.
And so... I guess the reason why I was asking you this question was that like we have so much fun talking about it.
Right.
And there's a world in which this is a different kind of show and it's just a comedy that's on every week.
It's like Veep. It's more like Veep than anything else.
Yes. But then when you think about, is the scene that we saw at the beginning of this season that much different than the scene on the boat from a couple of seasons ago where they're off of Croatia or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're like... angling to see who Logan is going to name and if he's going to name someone and what they're... It's basically like one scene. It's these kids angling to be named the next head of the company.
And I think the recognition is that if you have 7-8 seasons of this, you can't credibly have the Tom and Shiv moment at the end 8 seasons later.
No, you'd be Grey's Anatomy or Yellowstone and you'd be on to like Shiv's third husband.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, and the payoff is just way less. So then this couple that we've been watching for 3+ seasons now, right? And so I understand that you can't deliver the stakes if you just keep circling this same idea of who's going to take over this freaking media company. So I'm completely good with it, but I'm also somebody who thinks we have plenty of shit to watch.
I know. You know what I mean? So we saw, we'll go out on this. Did you watch like this season on Succession, that trailer? So I was very happy to see Stewie.
Mm-hmm.
Arguably my favorite Succession character. Looks like Skarsgård's back.
Yes, he is.
Lucas Mattson. I'm also very into Justin Kirk, who plays the like
Mencken,
yeah, who plays the like techno Peter Thiel MAGA guy. Yeah. Who are you most excited to get back in the mix?
Stewie. Yeah. Stewie by far. It was Stewie just because he's delivered some of the funniest lines on the show, and Stewie because
I can trust you, right? No,
no shot. Of course not.
But about money stuff, no,
like. He is, the reason why he's my favorite, one, because of the lines, but two, like somebody that conceivably you or I could meet out in the world.
Yeah.
And so that's more interesting to me because it's more grounded to our own lives in reality.
Backstage at an ASAP Rocky show
100% yeah. Easily. And so that's why Stewie's easily my favorite. He's the best.
So was there anything that caught your eye? People don't know. It's a several moment long. I actually stopped it after a while because I was like, I'm good. I get that this is going to be an exciting season. I don't want to like get any like spoilers or anything. But is there anything from that trailer that you were like, whoa, I can't wait?
Roman and the Swedish guy, they're setting us up to Skarsgård, whatever his character's name
Lucas
is.
Lucas Mattson, yeah.
Lucas Mattson.
And just to be clear, we love Swedish billionaires.
Yes, period. That goes without saying. I don't know why anyone would ever question that fact. I like that they're setting those two up to be super adversarial because I thought all of those scenes with Kieran Culkin and Skarsgård last year were like super electric.
Yeah.
And full of energy. And so I'm excited to see more of that for sure. That definitely caught my eye.
Yeah, me too. I wonder what his role in this whole thing is going to be. And it just does seem like, it seems like the presidential election is going to loom large over this season. And I've always thought that this show handled the real world very well. Like there are obvious like parallels, but then there are some things that, you know, that they take liberties with. And I'll be curious to see, because there's a Mencken line in the candidate says something where he's like, I want to win the presidency. And if I lose, I want it to be seen as a victory, which obviously echoes with some of our sore losers out there.
I mean, you know what's so funny? I didn't read that line that way.
As election denial?
No, I didn't. It wasn't a J6 thing for me. It was more... it was more like a Bernie thing. Bernie lost, but like the left is now resurgent
ascended
in America.
Yeah, yeah.
Like nobody was thinking about socialism before this. That's how I sort of read it. Like even though he lost, he won type of thing. But maybe it is that. And
probably not J6, but maybe he's like, I need, this is the context I want to lose in, you know?
Yeah, which I can understand. I don't get as itchy about those kinds of things, because I think there's a tendency to be like, oh, you can't get election politics wrong.
Yeah.
It's so important. And then, you know, part of me is like, is it?
Well, are you watching Succession to get like...
Hell no. Yeah. And if you are, guys, let me tell you. If you're watching this to get your politics, I think, you know what? I'll say this. I think Succession has great politics, to be honest. I think the politics of this show are that the ruling class is wholly incompetent and sometimes even bordering on ghoulish.
And completely reckless.
And reckless. And the idea that we're just completely cool with, you know, the freaking spalpeens of one fucking... media magnate to just rule the world after him is problematic. Like, I think the show has phenomenal politics, but they're just not, you know, super obvious about that.
Yeah, I think that it's also important to distinguish between the average Succession viewer's politics and what Jesse Armstrong's politics might be and the way that they get expressed through these characters that I think he has a healthy amount of affection for, but also a very obvious and healthy amount of disdain for.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And, you know, what I like about it, and of course, because he's not freaking American, like, he's not framing it in our red, blue, lib, conservative, blah, blah, blah paradigm. Like, because that those are just false truths, to be honest. Like, to pretend that the only way you can view the world is the way that CNN, MSNBC, and Fox frame the world for us is just false. It's not true. And I think this show rejects that notion. And that's what I like about its politics. It's that it's not tethered to
our conversation. Well, it's also typically, it's English, it's class-based.
Yeah, they get it. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to tell you guys.
Man, like, shout out to the English. Shout out to the Swedish billionaires. Yes. Shout out to this show. Shout out to Isaiah and Chris for producing us today. Wise, thanks for joining me. We'll be here every Friday morning, I believe, just to get you hyped up for the next episode of Succession. We got, what is it, 8 this season, I think? Or is it 10? I can't remember. I think it's 10 this season.
Yep.
And yeah, I can't wait till next week, man.
Chris, you're a good guy. You're my pal.
My best pal. Talk to you soon.